Today is Friday, February 1st, 2019. Hi, I'm John Williams, and this is The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios of WGN Radio. You can hear me weekdays from 1 to 3. Tragically, the open that we recorded for this week's Mincing Rascals was distorted and then lost. So we don't have the normal open. We will pick it up after we all introduce ourselves with the most famous of our introducers. We've only lost a couple of seconds here. One Mr. Eric Zorn.
I'm Eric Zorn, the insufficiently skeptical columnist for the Tribune. I run three times a week in the newspaper.
We expect our colleague Justin Kaufman to join us in a few minutes. He'll enter Studio D, stage right. Guess who's been the happiest this week with the record cold in Chicago? The cold in Chicago really has been not only our story, but a national story.
Who's the happiest? Tom Skilling would be my guess.
The happiest person of all, his name rhymes with Danny Solis, is Ed Burke. This would have been a very bad week for them, right? Because of all of the news that has come out but has really been buried under the snow and cold. To catch everybody up, late last year, remember the Fed papered over the office windows of the most powerful alderman in Chicago, maybe ever, Ed Burke. He's accused of extorting a Burger King franchisee for business for his private law firm. Shockaroo, that info came to light because for a few years and 18,000 calls, his colleague on the city council, Danny Solis, was wearing a wire. His phones were tapped. And now who knows what government investigators have on Chicago and Illinois politicians. So why was Solis being so helpful to the feds? Because we learned this week, the feds are alleging that Solis received sex acts, Viagra, free weekend use of an Indianapolis farm once owned by Oprah Winfrey.
Poor Oprah, why is she dragged into this?
She traded city favors for campaign contributions. We don't know how the feds got this on Solis, though. You know, how did they originally know all of that?
Right.
Where did that come from? But I guess we will.
Just one thing. We don't know exactly how this all came out because the Sun-Times gave us some highlights from 120-page federal affidavit, but they haven't, as far as I know, reproduced that affidavit on their website, so we haven't read the whole thing, so they may be parceling it out in drips and drabs.
The Sun-Times got that affidavit accidentally. They weren't supposed to see it. They have it, and now they're not being entirely straight up about it.
Accidentally?
Is it like a bad redaction?
Justin Kaufman just strolled into the studio, too. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Hello. How are you?
Okay, but pick this up, then. The biggest fish in all of this news this week, I think, is State House Speaker Mike Madigan. While his voice appears in some of the Solis tapes, it's not all that consequential. What's most interesting this week is the civil suit filed by one of his former opponents, a guy named Jason Gonzalez. He's charging that Madigan's team has run phony sham candidates against the speaker to dilute the vote and give the most familiar candidate, Madigan, an edge. Operation Whopper may cast the widest net, but I think the biggest fish in the state is Mike Madigan, and I love this story.
Well, it's old as Chicago running the stalking horse.
I agree, but it's just very interesting to see it play out.
Is it illegal? That's the issue. I mean, if you're going, I feel like that's
The allegation isn't that it's illegal. The allegation that Gonzalez is making in a federal civil suit is that it violates the Voting Rights Act because it's diluting the strength of minority voters. It's a technical argument that he's making because this is as old as Chicago, right? You find somebody with similar last name.
Right.
Didn't the Shaw brothers used to run four or five different people?
Yeah.
I mean, this is something that happens a lot.
To minority voters, too, right? So you say, well, if you're a strong Hispanic candidate, let's get a bunch of people with Hispanic names nobody knows, put them on the ballot. Folks will check the wrong boxes.
I'm going to say this isn't a new lawsuit. This suit was filed a while back, and I think it's Judge Connelly let it go forward. What's new this week
is that
the depositions came out. The deposition of Mike Madigan is public. And in this deposition, he's kind of like, I don't know how it happened.
By far is my favorite Netflix show, The Deposition of Mike Madigan.
Well, here's the thing my column this morning talks about what the Sun-Times has revealed in their stories about what happened in these meetings with Madigan and this developer. And there's absolutely nothing in that affidavit.
Absolutely right.
It's the least bit incriminating of Madigan. But if they catch him lying in this deposition, lying under oath is a crime. And so all these years, Madigan has arguably skated right up to the edge of the law, and nobody has ever caught him going over that line. If he's lying on the deposition over something as extremely stupid as this, as he put up candidates he didn't need to put up, because he beat Gonzalez and all of his opponents, you know, 65-35. You add up all the opponents that he, all the fake candidates, everything else. He whomped him in that district. If he goes down over these, you know, lying in his deposition, and I haven't read the whole thing, but when you're saying you don't remember things that you probably clearly remember, that comes very close to lying.
But then again, you just said it. He's done such a tremendous job in his political career of going up to the edge. And I feel like in this deposition, if you're going to do the Ollie North kind of, I don't remember, I don't recall, it covers you. It gets you right up to the edge,
it
and then you don't have to.
Pisses me off to read the transcripts from this deposition. Yeah. I'm going to read, I'm going to quote it. This is in the Tribune today. The district's population was about 60% Latino in 2011. Madigan said he was not concerned about the Gonzalez challenge because the speaker enjoyed widespread support among Hispanic people in the district. Pareja then asked Madigan whether he had reached out to any political allies to try to load up the ballot with candidates. I don't remember that, Madigan said. Is it possible that you did? Pareja asked. No, Madigan responded. So you're certain that you didn't do that? Pareja asked. I don't remember, Madigan said. And it just goes on and on like that.
Right.
Every time you think he'd be in a corner where he's either got to tell the truth and incriminate himself or lie, he just says, I don't remember.
If I remember my legal history properly, you can be prosecuted for perjury for saying you don't remember something that you clearly do remember. I mean, I don't think I don't remember is an automatic get out of jail free card.
Right, that should be a lie.
Then they've got to prove it another way.
That he knew.
They've got to have evidence
that he remembered.
Yeah.
Like any sort of paper trail or phone trail, which does not scream Mike Madigan.
It's possible, Justin, that they can find an incriminating document that says that he did this, and then they can say, look at this. Now do you remember? He goes, oh, yeah, now I remember. I don't understand why he didn't just come in and go, yeah, we did it. This is what we do. This is, you know, where you been, Tony Pareja? Where you been, Gonzalez? This happens all the time. Wake up.
Doesn't it bother you guys?
Run for office in Chicago.
I mean, so you wonder, like, people are so mad at Mike Madigan all the time, or in Ed Burke or whatever. How is it that those people in that district keep voting for them? Well, they kind of stack the ballot in their favor by running sham candidates that they can beat.
You know, they keep coming up with all these new rules, and it's going to be like the possession rule in the NFL. It's just not going to be fun to watch anymore.
But are we talking
that's what you got for
Tony Pareja?
Right. There's another interesting suit, and this suit was just filed, I think, on Monday by this kid, and I'm forgetting his name, the DePaul student who's running against Alderman Quinn on the southwest side. And his allegation is actually much more sinister, which is that they sent like goons around after him, and they got people to sign affidavits that I'm retracting my signature on his petitions. They got more people to sign that than actually sign the petition. So there's all kinds of like potential perjury there. Don't know how close that comes to Madigan. Everyone says, oh, Quinn is Madigan's guy. But
a lot of those aldermen, and I think Burke, and I think Quinn, and I think Madigan, of course, in Springfield, their actual districts are so gerrymandered in a way that over the years, the demographics have changed drastically.
Yeah.
We were talking about this in the 90s, about how, I remember, I think it was Alderman Murphy, and there were others on the southwest side who had, they were white aldermen that there was predominantly black neighborhoods, and white aldermen are predominantly Latino neighborhoods, but they would always win with 80-90% of the vote. That can't just be, we really like this alderman.
Or we're doing a good job,
This is an ethnic city with ethnic politics at its heart. So obviously there is some way they have figured out how to rig up re-election after re-election after re-election in wards and districts that they are not the predominant.
Well, certainly the big test of that is going to be in the 14th Ward this time with Alderman Burke, who has been charged with a crime, and he's running against a Latino candidate who is endorsed by Chuy Garcia. I mean, everything is set up, and this ward is predominantly Hispanic. It's like overwhelmingly Hispanic, right?
Overwhelming.
And Burke has been winning over the years there. But this time, if Burke can pull this out, and they pull it out, you know, Justin's asked, well, how do they do it? Well, they do it by, you know, putting a lot of money into mailers and signs, and they go around and they do these constituent services. And people think, well, you know, does it really matter who my alderman is? This guy's got power. This guy could get me my garbage can if I wanted, get my tree trimmed if I wanted. This guy's a good guy to call, or do I want to elect some rookie that no one's going to pay attention to? That's the card they play, I think, more than the ethnic card.
Well,
and
that's
this is the hugest test.
And that's not a bad reason to vote for somebody.
It's not.
But this will sound naive. It is a little. Isn't it outrageous, though, the tactics that they use? Doesn't that kind of tick you guys off?
It does tick you. It does.
Isn't it just how low the bar is? We go, yeah, that's the way it is in Chicago.
And I would assume when you're running, and I hate to, it's unbelievable that I'm saying this, but a flawed candidate like Alderman Burke. It's amazing to think that you would say that.
For 50 years.
Yeah, but if you're gonna run a flawed candidate who's under indictment or is charged with a crime while he's on the campaign trail, I would assume you're going to see the bar even lower. I'm going to see they're going to pull out all the stops to win this one.
Well, that's what I was thinking, that if the Ed Burks and Mike Madigans of the world do this stuff, then what about the guys that are trying to climb the ladder?
What do you think of that? I wonder if the guys climbing the ladder are beyond this now. This is the old school.
I wonder because the story as well is, and pay very close attention to the Alderman Burks reelection, because if he loses, that's a win for Chuy Garcia. And Congressman Garcia has become quite a kingmaker in Chicago. He had the victory over Burke's brother, Dan Burke, in the midterm. And I just wonder, I think you see a new era of Chicago politics where Chuy Garcia's name is up on the masthead for what we know to be the kingmakers in this town.
What's a longer list? People running for president on the Democrat side or people running for mayor in Chicago?
Well, right now it's mayor. Declared candidates. Cory Booker jumped in for the Democrats today, but most of them are still just flirting with it.
Well, if you include some who are flirting seriously with it, and we figure are going to be in there. I don't know, Bernie Sanders, would you put him on the, yeah, he's going to run list? At least he's making noise along those lines. I've got Booker, Buttigieg, the mayor in Indiana, South Bend. What an interesting character he is. Castro, Delaney, Gabbard, Gillibrand, Harris, Warren, Yang. You don't even know some of those names, and some of the ones you do know. This story's 2 days old that I'm reading from. This is actually 11 days old. More have been added to this list.
Is O'Rourke on that list?
O'Rourke is not on this list. He's on the might run list. Klobuchar is on the might run list. Schultz is on the might run list, but I guess is he technically an official candidate?
No, he was going to run as an independent. Right?
But he's not yet going to run.
I'm going to put him on. You're either a Republican or you're not on this list.
He's exploring his candidacy, and Trump is trying to bait him into running by saying he's not. What is he? Doesn't have the guts to run.
Yeah, and I think
that's so funny.
The president. Is always transparent, but that doesn't mean it doesn't work. If that would hurt Democrats, it helps him.
Schultz got the crap kicked out of him for
he did
flirting with running.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that he was that reviled.
But he brought nothing to the table. His announcement was like, I'm going to bring people together, make them. It was as shallow an ill-conceived rollout as I've ever seen.
Yeah, but that's not why he got the crap kicked out of him, right? It's the liberals are concerned that he's going to run as an independent and siphon Democratic votes away and help Donald Trump win.
That's why everyone was why everyone paid attention.
And he's got Steve Schmidt, I think, working for him, the guy who ran the McCain campaign. Yeah,
but I think Colbert was right when he said, okay, so they asked him, what is your plan for taxes?
Now, you may be wondering what a centrist independent believes, and you're going to keep wondering. Because when Schultz was asked what he thought the corporate tax rate should be, he said, I don't want to talk in the hypothetical about what I would do if I was president. That's literally the only thing you're supposed to be doing while running for president. What, instead of yes, we can, it's what will we?
And you need a slogan, too. Not your Frappuccino is ready.
I know what going to say. Should I leave room for cream?
It's America's wake-up call. Come on, right there.
There you
As
go.
If the weather and the political corruption in Chicago were not enough to give us a black eye this week, Empire actor Jussie Smollett was... let me see if I have the facts on this right, because some of it seems to be in play. He was mugged in Streeterville. He charges that some liquid, maybe bleach, was poured on him and that a noose was hung around his neck.
A rope, yeah.
He's the victim of a hate crime. He's black. He's gay. He's out. He says that the assailants said this is MAGA country. Is the charge that they were wearing MAGA hats?
They're not.
As well?
They were not wearing MAGA hats.
Okay.
The Smollett's team went to clarify some of the things that have just gone spread like wildfire on the internet with TMZ this morning, yesterday, that essentially said he never said they were wearing MAGA hats. That was made up. And the other one was that he kept the rope around his neck until he got to the hospital when he was going to get checked out. And that is not accurate as well. He kept the rope on until the police arrived so he could show them the evidence and not tamper with the evidence. Yeah. And there was a third indicator as well, and I can't remember what it was. The Chicago police came out today. Hedy Johnson's on a tour about it, which is strange.
Well, he's on a tour about January crime numbers.
And everyone wants to talk to him about this. Right. But essentially that it came out that he was not cooperating with the police, that they wanted to see his phone and he wouldn't show, or the records, he wouldn't show it. And that's all untrue as well.
He's been very cooperative with us, and I don't see any reason why he wouldn't continue to be cooperative.
He said he was willing to turn over the police the phone records.
Well, we're working with him in that regard. I mean, you know, think about it. How uncomfortable would it be for you to be without your cell phone for a few hours? You know, so we're working with them on that. And like I said, he's been cooperative.
He said they're cooperating. They said he is cooperating.
Johnson
fully
says that,
and he just said, "Let me get him to you." But they made it seem like he was trying to hide something. He's not trying to hide something.
Anthony Guglielmi was quoted in the Tribune today that police spokesman saying that he was not sharing his phone records.
Yeah, but this is coming from Smollett's camp saying, no, that's not true.
Now, the unsaid thing in at least the Tribune story today was that this might be a hoax. I mean, no one ever says it, but you read between the lines and it's like, well, we looked at all the video, we didn't see anything, and then we saw two guys, but they were walking south and he was walking north or something like that.
It was very unusual to me that the police that night said that we've got him on video, but we don't have anyone else. Why would investigators ever say that we don't have, you know, to tell the bad guys, we don't have you on video yet? And when I heard that, I'm thinking, the police think this story's hinky. Yeah. Just the way they spoke said so much so quickly.
Yeah. The hardest part about this story is that you will have conjecture and conspiracy, and you will have people who think it's a hoax because it's unsaid, and everyone wants to talk about the water cooler. And how that bleeds over into the news. Meaning, you know, this is how news works. If somebody says that they were attacked and they show evidence of an attack, he was admitted to the hospital, it's his record, and then the police investigation goes to follow that up, that's the facts.
And that doesn't make the news reporter wrong.
No,
he's simply reporting what somebody else said.
And to me, this is such a hard story because I, too, as you know, your radar kind of goes off. There's some questions that still haven't been answered, and you're kind of head scratching. But at the same time, if true, it is a hate crime. And the idea that Smollett is saying he was assaulted and people did this and they put a rope around his neck and they threw out expletives and slurs and said this is MAGA country and poured chemicals on him, that should not happen to any human being in any circumstance.
Absolutely.
And I
not.
Feel weird and kind of gross that anyone's even questioning if it happened, if that makes sense.
It's a dangerous topic because if you're wrong, it really looks bad. This is an intersection of so many volatile topics in this country right now, right? Race, hate crimes, gay, MAGA. I mean, and when they all intersect, it almost challenges credulity. You think, really? All of that came together in this instance?
I don't want to make light of it, but my biggest concern with this story is these guys are in Streeterville. On Illinois Street, in the shadow of the skyscrapers at 2 o'clock in the morning, saying this is MAGA country. No, it's not. Buddy. Go if this happened somewhere else, they'd say it's MAGA. Isn't it MAGA country in Streeterville?
It reminds me a little bit. I hate to say this from Jeffrey McDonald, the doctor in the Fatal Vision case, who said that the hippies came in and killed his wife, and were saying acid is groovy and killed the. I mean, it's like something like acid is groovy, kill the pigs. It just doesn't sound like something that would actually happen. Now, it doesn't mean that it didn't happen, and again, you do feel a little bit like, well, gee, this guy, if this really happened, it is a horrible thing, and you have to give them the presumption that it did. But the fact that they got their video cameras all over the place.
That's the one thing that's weird about it. There are video cams where this happened. That's across the street from that old Fox and Obel where the Target's at now.
Mm-hmm.
That's where North Pier is at. There are cameras. I mean, not to mention probably every residence there has a camera that's out, a doorbell camera going out their window. I would just assume. That is not, even at 2 o'clock in the morning,
I lived there for a few months, and at 2 a.m, there's still foot traffic. There's still cab traffic. There's still
a lot of traffic.
If you were walking down the street with a rope around your neck, somebody would have seen that.
Right.
Somehow
that would
have been captured.
That's the only head scratcher to me is why they can't find surveillance of it happening with all of those businesses with cameras.
Okay, but so then you've sort of come, you've deviated from where you started, where, you know, the facts on the ground are that this happened and police are investigating as it happened, and yet here we're pointing out
all
of these things.
You're right. And that's the danger of it. I mean, I'm as guilty as anybody else there are facts of the story, and it's a horrific hate crime. And this is ridiculous and shouldn't happen in our society. And then yet there are these questions that are lingering like a head scratch where you're like, God, I wish I just could see the video.
Did it strike any of you about the police releasing information? I mean, because that really just jumped out on me. And I don't think I'm wrong on that it seemed odd that they said so quickly that we've got...
It's like Eric said in the Tribune.
Unless
there's a vibe there where they're going as far to the edge to say... So this could be a hoax without saying it. They dot, dot, dot everything. All the officials have done the same thing.
The stories feel the same way. It feels like nobody really wants to say there was some mention of like some commentary on social media, but people are holding back from having a discussion that we're having right here because it's one of those things. And I think maybe in the wake of the Covington High School thing where everyone like too quickly jumped to conclusions about exactly what happened. Everyone's like, okay, well, wait a minute. Let's not just assume that the first thing we hear is the right thing. Let's be skeptical.
Right, but I've seen tweets this week, Eric, that said, well, why would he make this up? What's his agenda?
I don't know.
I don't even like that question because then the ice gets much thinner. You know, I mean, now we're really speculating as to if it's not true, why is it not true? That makes me even more uncomfortable.
Well, that's, but Steve, fair enough.
John, stop making it so uncomfortable.
Right. You're hurting me.
I think that since nobody's harmed by us being wrong about this, you should take the man at face value. The only collateral damage here is maybe the president, and even he said this is a terrible thing.
Right.
So I think you should take him at face value, like you said, Justin.
Yeah.
Report what is being reported. That doesn't make you inaccurate. Tell the story as it's unfolding, and if the truth changes, let's not kill the messenger over that.
I take him at face value. I don't think there's any reason for him to have, and I don't think there's any evidence that says that this was a hoax of any form. I'm concerned that there are a lot of storylines that are online that are trying to break down his story.
Does this play at all into the conversation we have about believe women and sexual attacks and so on that don't take place on the street but take place in private residences or hallways where you don't have evidence and you say, well, this doesn't make sense. Why would anyone do that? Or in the end of the day, how would you make that up? I mean, people do make up stories. Tawana Brawley made up this story about being attacked. I mean, I don't want to lump him into that story necessarily, but it does happen that people, for one reason or another, to get attention, to draw attention to some cause, it does happen. And so do we just say, well, let's wait and see what more we learn here, realizing that the signals that are coming from the officials are don't get out of your skis on this story. Wait to find out what we can find out.
And I said there's no collateral damage, but, you know, not to be Pollyanna-ish about it, but the city's image suffers.
Yeah, you're right.
The, you know, ethos of the people suffer. If we all think, wow, Chicago's the kind of city that does this, has people in it that do these sorts of things.
And we talked about it earlier, Eddie Johnson talking about crime numbers. In January, 20 people were killed in the city, which was half of the number last year and the lowest number, I think, since 2009. 100 gun.
Gary McCarthy's taking credit for that.
I get that. I also think that the numbers have to be skewed by weather.
The weather was fine until the last couple of days.
No, but there was a snowstorm. There was four days in a row.
There's only 31
saying,
in a month.
I don't know.
I didn't cut it in half.
I just feel like the victory tour over
it's pretty big.
Yeah, all right.
The weather.
Bertrand, he says he believes in it.
Okay, what do we need to talk about in Trump land this week? We've just touched on the president. Normally, there's a lot of news about him.
The only thing that got my attention, there's a lot of stuff on Trump, but Mitch McConnell, you guys talk about how he will not call the bill on making Election Day a federal holiday. He essentially came out and said it's a power grab by Democrats to do that.
Getting people to vote is a power grab.
Right.
We don't want to
make it easier for people to vote.
Making it easier to vote is a power grab for Democrats.
I mean, that was repellent.
By the way, that was repellent.
My Trump news this week that I thought was the most interesting was him just saying that these negotiations that they're having in Congress are a waste of time, and that in whatever it is, the day after Valentine's Day, is that what it is?
15th, yeah.
15th.
Yeah, yeah.
He keeps hinting very strongly that he's going to declare a national emergency after all these years. Oops, it's an emergency. I've got to use military funds and disaster relief funds to build my stupid wall.
Well, my Trump moment was when the heads of all the intelligence agencies testified on Capitol Hill, right, and directly contradicted what he had to say about Iran living up to the deal, about North Korea, about Russia. They directly contradicted him. He was asked about that in the Oval Office, and he said he talked to them about it, and they said that they were misquoted, that it was fake news.
It was on TV.
It was a nationally televised live congressional hearing.
They were totally misquoted, and they were totally, it was taken out of context. So what I do is I'd suggest that you call them. They said it was fake news, so which frankly didn't surprise me.
We just ran exactly what they said to Congress.
Excuse me. But we're here to talk right now about China.
Did the fact they didn't bring up the border as the world threat assessment, did that undermine or undercut what you have said, that there's a crisis at the border?
We need a wall. And if we don't have a wall, we're never going to have security for our country.
But they didn't bring it up as part of the national security assessment. Does that undercut?
Please.
More details. And, you know, and it's funny until it's not, you know, that this guy really thinks that he can say that. And people believe him.
I love that the Mincing Rascals is a weekly podcast, and you could go back. I was just thinking a couple days ago with Trump, because everything is happens in the 24-hour cycle. Remember he had to take a shot at global warming, which was just on Tuesday. As the temperatures dropped, he went out of his way on Twitter, misspelling global warming, to discredit or just to disprove global warming, because it's cold in the Midwest.
I heard someone else say this morning, and so it's not my, I don't take credit for it, not that it's absolutely ingenious observation, but if you step back and look at the tweets that are coming out, they are the tweets of a madman. I mean, this is the president. It is so absurd that the president of the United States is sitting in his castle and tweeting things like this. And I think sometimes we forget just how absurd it is.
I think that there must be awesome pressure or a sense of responsibility, I hope, at Fox and Friends. Because they aren't the tweets of a madman. Maybe they are. But they're also the tweets of a morning television show that the madman watches. When they did a segment that they had a North Dakota, I think it was, representative on, talking about that we should give public schools the opportunity to teach Bible lessons. And maybe that plays in North Dakota. Maybe that plays in some circles.
It didn't play in North Dakota. It failed in North Dakota. But
so this guy's on TV, and then the president immediately tweets out, hey, I just heard about this. I think it's a good idea. That's the cycle, right? And then we consume that as news for better or worse.
Yeah, so you watch the weather report. He's got something to say about it.
Totally. And so when then he says something snarky, when he baits people like me with global warming, I was very proud that this week, given all the opportunity I had talking about the weather, I didn't go there, because that's one of those things that don't matter.
I don't think he's baiting people. I think he thinks that his followers are so dense that they'll believe anything he tweets, and he thinks this supports them.
I think he gets way too much credit for being cagey. He's dumb.
Just gave him cagey credit.
Let me finish that sentence. But I think in this case, he and Ann Coulter know, and I love watching Ann Coulter go from supporter to troller now, but they know that that'll just light people like me up. Now, he doesn't do this on purpose, but when he was calling out the intelligence people for not being intelligent enough, he misspelled there. He went with T-H-E-R-E instead of T-H-E-I-R. He used the wrong version of it. Which makes me, I go these places, it's a waste of time, but I think, okay, is he using voice-to-text? Because voice-to-text will get there wrong. But if you're typing it with your thumbs, then you don't know that it's wrong. You typed out T-H-E-R.
There's autocorrect. I think global waming says that he's not using voice-to-text. But I sometimes wonder if he puts those things in on purpose, because he knows that
people like
Justin
me.
Kaufman are gonna get in a snit about it, and then their snit is going to make his followers think they're just attacking
us. That was my nickname in high school, too.
That's just crazy. This is a guy who wants to be, you know, he's very intelligent. He went to some of the best schools. He reads a lot of books, and he knows words. He's not going to misspell something on purpose.
Come on, Steve. What are you saying?
He's not cagey. No. He's not cagey. He's not. We keep running these circles around like, oh, maybe he's outthinking people. He's not outthinking anyone.
So do you think he doesn't know how to spell there?
I think that's an autofill. I misspell there on text. I think that happens. By the way, I think Apple has changed their software somehow, because my texting lately has just been crazy wrong.
Yeah.
So there's something. But yeah, no, I don't, you know what? I understand that. That's the thing a normal president wouldn't do, because there'd be 18 proofreaders. But that happens. That doesn't bother me.
You know, since we last gathered in this studio, Roger Stone was arrested. I mean, it is really amazing
how fast.
I mean, when these things happen, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to talk about that on The Rascals. And then by the time we get in the studio, it's like, oh, man, that seems like history.
Well, let's do a quick fact check. What do we all know about Roger Stone, right? Longtime political operative, worked for Bob Dole, worked for Ronald Reagan, worked for Bush. He's come up through the Republican ranks.
Prescription sunglasses.
He is a guy who has a tattoo of Richard Nixon on his back, because Nixon was Tricky Dick, and he describes himself as a trickster. He's a dirty trickster. He'll get stuff done in politics. There was a movie made about him called Get Me Roger Stone.
Don't talk to me unless you've seen it.
Steve Bertrand's all-time favorite movies, and I'm this close to watching it now, Steve. But I think now I'm watching the movie in real life. He gets arrested, right? 29,000 SWAT team guys. It's sort of like the scene in Christmas Vacation at the end of the movie. They all come crashing in on his house. And they did they handcuff him when they walked him out of his place?
I think he walked out.
He and his wife like and his dog, yeah. They almost sounded like the Blagojeviches were outraged.
I think they have to do that. I think because I remember the guys who arrested Blagojevich handcuffed him, and they kind of they were saying, well, this is just standard practice. They didn't think that he was going to turn around and try to beat him up or try to make a run for it. But
right.
it's yeah. just you just do that. It's you.
So yeah. so that's a big story this week. Was it overreach? Literally the way he was rounded up. I don't care. He's out a short time later throwing up his Dick Nixon peace signs.
Victory.
And
that's victory, not peace.
That was victory, I guess, huh? That's the
for,
two.
For Nixon, yeah. it was victory.
Victory.
Not peace,
yeah. Okay.
He's not a peace guy.
I don't know what to make of this, dude. I can't tell. And it was, I think, right after the fact. I don't know if it was done before or after, just the way Instagram works. But they have the pictures that say Roger Stone, he's wearing a T-shirt that says Roger Stone isn't guilty or didn't do anything. And he's with Milos.
Foreman.
Milos Foreman. Milos Yiannopoulos or whatever. And they're you know, they're posing together on Instagram, and there's hundreds of thousands of likes, essentially flaunting.
He's raising money now for his defense fund.
Yeah, that's but it's all about the fact that this is a reach by the special prosecutor's office. I don't even know the facts, and I'm getting the fact that this.
Well, the suggestion is that he was the go between the campaign and Wikipedia.
Yeah, yeah.
WikiLeaks. Wikipedia.
Someday it's going to be the same thing, but right now they are charging that he was the guy that was the operative in
right.
between.
I don't know what the defense is, but the defense from at least from the Instagram. Piece is that this is just they're reaching.
He had a funny way of putting it.
I mean, he was predicting when the WikiLeaks were coming out, but he lies all the time, and he lies about his lies. I mean, he's again.
That's what the whole thing was about. Saying you are getting an obstruction of justice because he lied about a lie about a lie.
Right.
That's the best you got.
This could be the key to the Mueller report. I mean, if he's the link to WikiLeaks, if they're the ones working with people in the campaign and coordinating the WikiLeaks releases, we know the Russians were involved in that. This could be this could be very central.
And he was quite adamant. He put it in a curious sort of way. I will not betray the trust or the truth to my president. He had a funny way of saying, I won't lie for Donald Trump. So
the prospect of going to prison is going to probably sober him up quite a bit when it comes to telling what he knows. And, you know, the question is, what's on all... I mean, they seize, a terabyte-size hard drive of his correspondence and videos and everything. I mean,
so that'll take a while.
Who knows what they're going to get on this guy? I would not take his protestations of innocence all that seriously at this point.
You guys saw some of the commercials that will run on the Super Bowl. Perhaps while you're listening to this podcast, the Super Bowl has already happened and you've seen them. We've previewed them. Some of us have. Have you seen some of them?
I haven't seen any of them.
You're not missing much. Here's the thing that makes a good Super Bowl commercial. You either need a puppy dog on top of a Budweiser Clydesdale.
Oh,
you need something huge and swelling, or you need something sexy and funny.
I'm worried.
And a lot of the commercials are not that. They're thoughtful. There's one for Michelob Light where it's a beautiful woman and she's whispering. And it's very dramatic. And I'm like, dude, have you ever watched a football game at a party? Everybody's watching the game. The commercial comes on. The volume goes up of everybody. They're getting up and getting snacks.
Did you see the Lebowski
You need to
commercial?
Cut through that. Yes, I did.
Is that? I'm worried about that one because that is a sacred character. And I don't like him being taken out of the world that
That's
he lives in.
That's the Stella Artois ad?
Yeah,
he gets to order and a white Russian. He says, no, I don't want a white Russian. I want a Stella Artois. Right. Oh, boy.
But everybody drops
That's not
their,
cutting through the clutter.
Everybody drops their tray like you're ordering that swill when you could order our fine beverages. I don't understand that at all.
Oh, right. It's shocking because this beverage is not good enough.
Hello. Good to see you again.
Likewise.
Please, Cosmopolitan.
No, tonight I'll have a Stella Artois.
So what's the ad that you thought was going to pop?
I've got two ads that I really liked, and it's ones that we've seen. Now we haven't seen them all. One of them is the Hyundai elevator ad. Jason Bateman is the elevator operator, and the people get on. They say, we're going to go buy a car. Everyone in the elevator is going to some horrible. We're going down, and they're going to some horrible. Everyone's
each
going
stop
to
is some place you don't want to get off.
It's like a colonoscopy, I think, is
or
one of them.
A vegan Thanksgiving.
Yeah, right.
And she says, "How about a beet loaf?" And he goes, "No, I don't want that." Ding.
This stop jury duty. Remember, innocent until proven.
Well, he did it, right? Can we all agree he did it.
Okay, 6-hour flight, middle seat.
And it goes to the next floor. It's something awful.
app from Hyundai.
You think that's a good ad?
I think it's funny.
I think it's a very funny
ad. The only one I laughed at. I watched all
the time. It's not a good Super Bowl ad.
Why not?
Because it's too long. It's too nuanced. You've got to sit there and listen to and watch. Go, oh, that's a funny scene.
What kind of Super Bowl parties do you go to? The ones that I go to, maybe I don't go to the right
ones. I don't believe you do go to Super Bowl parties.
It's been a while. But the ones, that's not quite true. We have guests over and sometimes. But everybody stops. Everyone, the game is on. And that's when people are talking. And then, because people don't, in the Chicago, do we care who wins between LA and
not anymore.
Except I've decided I can't stand the Patriots. But everybody shuts up for the commercials. Everyone gathers around for the commercials, and then they disperses when the game comes back.
Okay, so your ad meter has that one.
That one, and I like the Microsoft ad. That was my funny one. The one that was kind of moving was the ad for Microsoft that has kids with disabilities using their new special pad to play games, and the kids are talking about why it's important for kids with disabilities. And these kids don't have hands in some cases. And
the closing shot on that commercial is fantastic.
It's a beautiful ad, and I'm not exactly sure. I mean, it's just like an image enhancing ad for Microsoft, but it's very touching. Very. So those two ads. The rest of them, I was bored.
The only thing that I've watched the Super Bowl ads for are the trailers for the movies that are coming up. On the Cochrane Show, nobody cares at all about the trailers for Infinity War, but the Infinity War Part 2 is coming out in March. I have an 11-year-old son. I have vested interest in that film, and I want to see what they put out. And they have promised there'll be a new trailer. There has not. I haven't seen it yet. So.
Speaking of movies, let's do our recommendations. I'll go first. We watched a lot of movies the last few days because that's what America did, at least in the Midwest, TV shows and movies. We watched The Wife with Glenn Close, which came out this year. And producer Griffin, who follows movies more closely than the people in my orbit, says she's a strong candidate for Best Actress. She plays the wife of a best-selling author. And there's a twist in the movie about her relationship with her husband, and then maybe another twist at the end. It's a good movie. It's not the best movie you'll see, but she's terrific in it. And it's a really good movie that you probably haven't paid that much attention to, The Wife, my recommendation this week. How about you, Mr. Z?
We're still watching The Americans. I don't know if I've mentioned that show, but we've been enjoying that show. So, we're like still in season one. So don't tell me what happens.
Thrillist.
I hear that they're actually Russians.
Thrillist comes out with their list of the 60 best TV shows of the year, and I think that's in the top five.
Yeah.
It's a good series, The Americans.
I like the final six episodes of Kimmy Schmidt. I watched them. They came out this week, and a perfect thing. I think they probably had a tremendous amount of ratings this week with the polar vortex and everyone getting watching it. But it's really good. It's an absurd show, but the characters are great. The writing is great. I'd say that we're going to miss that show as it wrapped up its final show.
Bertrand had to go away. Now he's come back. He's getting ready to do his live radio show. Which
you guys are still talking
up
here?
Do you want to add your recommendation this week?
So Skittles isn't doing an ad. They're doing a Broadway show at 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon at a theater in New York with Michael C. Hall as the
What are they live streaming it, or what are they going to do?
I don't know if they're going to live stream it or not. They're going to do it, and they're going to raise money. And they put out a teaser video of them singing "Advertising Is Bad," and so they're singing this Broadway song. And
what's the show about?
As they eat Skittles.
It's a show about Skittles.
They haven't said really, but it's a Broadway show. It's written by renowned people or people who have a success. They're going to perform it one time, and then all of the proceeds are going to go to the actors' charities.
Nice. Well, that's a good idea. I'm kind of curious what that's going to look like.
And I like the Hyundai ad. Did you talk about that one?
Yes,
yeah, I love that one.
Yeah, all right. So we got two votes for the Hyundai ad.
Okay.
Maybe that's
to quote Ferris Bueller, if I may, go home. You guys go home.
By the way, Prosecuting the President by Andrew Cohen. I'm interviewing him this week. Prosecuting the President by Andrew Cohen. You wonder what a special prosecutor does and how he does it these days? From Richard Nixon to the current special investigation, this little book, Prosecuting the President, is a fascinating short history.
And I see Team of Vipers there next to you. Is that a good book?
I just got it. Cliff Sims, the guy who worked with Trump on the communications side, has got his book out. Trump says he was a gopher. He was unimportant. He was close to the president for a long time, in part because he was a gopher. I believe his storytelling, I don't like him that much because he's also a Trumpian who's lost his love for the president. So I don't have a review on this yet. I'm only 30 pages in. Okay, that drops. That's our podcast this week. Bob Ferguson usually helps us with some of the dials. We're produced by Olive Garris. Thank you, gang, for that. Eric Zorn, Justin Kaufman and Steve Bertrand, Patty Vasquez and Scott Stantos will join us another day. I'm John Williams, and we'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.